This is Josh Sumby, and I'm a sales agronomist for CHS Ag Services in Drayton, North Dakota. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Good afternoon. Farm news on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Don Wick, along with Tyler Donaldson here at the Prairie Grains Conference. We have Jamie Dickerman in studio. More from Jamie in just a moment. But first, the trade, of course, watching every flash sale from USDA, including one this morning from China. That 12 million ton target has been a bit of a moving target. Originally, the thought was this commitment would be made by the end of this calendar year. Here at Prairie Grains, we asked Kleist Commodity Advisors President Al Kleist if that 12 million ton total will be realized.
And so you think about the marketing year, September 1 through August 31, it was never realistic that they were going to import 12 million metric tons by the end of December. Not realistic. They're going to import 440 million bushels by the end of February. Just logistically, it's about impossible. Right now, they've purchased about 4 million bushels of cash beans. I do think when you look at the open interest in the soybean futures, that they've covered themselves with futures contracts, and eventually they'll exchange for cash. And so it's a very evolving situation. The news and what we've gotten from the administration has not been consistent from one speaker to the next, but I think now it's right, and I think they will honor that agreement. One thing is, you know, some of this is in price, some of it's in currency values, but this year's U.S. bean crop, very good quality and very dry. And so what they like to do is buy those dry U.S. soybeans, put them in their strategic reserve, and if they need to, they can leave them there for 3 to 5 years before they rotate them out. So this they'll get them, but probably at a pace that's slower than what you or I would like.
We, of course, pay attention to the PNW in this part of the world. Are the beans primarily going there, or are they going out of the Gulf?
It's about half and half. You know, you're seeing half go to the Gulf, half go to the PNW. I get a report every week about the ships that are loading in the PNW and those that are on their way, and we are starting to see some soybean ships coming from China for China. We're seeing a lot of soybeans being sold to our traditional customers, Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, and so for the people that are really very frustrated with the current base situation, just be patient.
I spoke this morning. North Dakota climatologist and Endon director Dale Richardson is on the schedule this afternoon. From the Prairie Grains Conference, I'm Don Wick.
The Trump administration rolling out a new $700 million regenerative agriculture pilot program aimed at helping American farmers improve soil health, water quality, and long-term productivity. Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins and Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. detailing how the initiative will support farmers transitioning to regenerative practices.
We will deliver this support through existing programs our farmers already know and already trust. Protecting and improving our soil is critical, not only for the future viability of farmland, but to the future success of American farmers. In order to continue to be the most productive and most efficient growers in the world, we must protect our topsoil from unnecessary erosion and boost the microbiome of the soil. Today's announcement encourages these priorities while supporting farmers to transition to regenerative agriculture if they so choose.
Kennedy says initiative fulfills key commitments from the Trump administration's MAHA report and marks a major step towards supporting healthier soils and stronger rural communities.
They give them an off-ramp. Farmers who are dependent on inputs, on chemical and fertilizer inputs, give them an off-ramp where they can transition to a model that emphasizes soil health, and with soil health comes nutrient density. And without coercion, through voluntary action, give them good incentives to do well by doing good for themselves, for our children, and for the country.
USDA will direct $400 million through EQIP, $300 million through the CSP to fund the first year of the regenerative agriculture project. Trade deal between the U.S. and Indonesia on shaky ground. In the deal that was negotiated in October, Indonesia was supposed to eliminate 99% of the tariffs on U.S. exports. Trump administration officials indicate Jakarta has been slow to implement this deal. Indonesia has refused on terms of key parts of the agreement. Bismarck, North Dakota will host the first national listening session about the updated definition of waters of the United States. North Dakota Senator Kevin Cramer hosting representatives of the EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers. That will happen tomorrow morning. The new WOTUS rule is in the midst of public comment period, which closes January the 5th. A new CoBank report looking ahead to 2026 says large global grain and oilseed supplies will keep pressure on markets into next year. However, rising biofuel production and better export conditions suggest prices may have already hit their lows. CoBank says demand for U.S. grains and oilseeds should keep strengthening as lower prices encourage increased usage. In the state of Minnesota, environmental activist groups have put farmers in the crosshairs with litigation. Lobbyist Bruce Clavin says these groups are asking the courts to force state agencies to take action.
So we've seen it in three areas. We've seen it on nitrates in the water, we've seen it on treated seed, and we're likely to see it on drainage. And the claims they're making are under the State Environmental Rights Act. It's not under the pesticide law or the seed law or the drainage law. It's under the Environmental Rights Act. And the guts of the claim are that the state isn't doing enough. And so these environmental groups are asking courts to force them to do what they want.
Clavin says agriculture will be at the table as these cases move forward.
Ag groups intervened in the nitrate case, and they intervened in the treated seed case, and I'm guessing the ag groups would intervene in the drainage case as well. And the significance of becoming an intervening party is you become an actual party to the case. And therefore, we sit alongside the Attorney General's office and the state agencies if there's any settlements. If the ag groups weren't there, there could be the potential for a sue and settle, meaning that the environmental groups would settle with the Attorney General's office and the agency, and then there'd be a new rulemaking anyway. That's what they've done nationally, and there was the potential for that here, but I think the ag group involvement staved that off.
Go to the Red River Farm Network's website, rrfn.com, to sign up for the weekly FarmNet News newsletter. You can also download this broadcast and follow us on Facebook and X. It's all right there at rrfn.com. Reporting agriculture's business, this is the Red River Farm Network. Farm news on the Red River Farm Network. At the Prairie Grains Conference in Grand Forks, North Dakota Barley Council board member Frank Laufer says the state's barley sector is steady despite a challenging farm economy, with growers leaning on crop rotation benefits and expanding pet food demand.
Yes, acres are up about 22% for the year, and that's pretty good for our industry because consumption is actually kind of down, and most of the barley raised in North Dakota is for the brewing industry. There is a lot for pet food too, but most of it's for the brewing industry. And so the light in our eyes right now is, yeah, we're up a little bit. That's good.
Laufer says rotation remains a key reason farmers stick with barley even as input costs climb and the market soften.
All small grains are kind of in the same boat, whether it's wheat, us. We kind of lose acres to soybeans and corn, and so our shining light is that it's in a lot of people's rotations, keeps the farm on the same pace, and a lot of people don't like to change all the time. So rotation is key, and barley is a great rotation for North Dakota farms.
Laufer says keeping barley competitive in federal policy discussions will be essential as Congress takes another run at a farm bill, hopefully next year. North Dakota Grain Growers Association presented its Colonel Award for outstanding service to two individuals last night. The Farmer Award went to past President Tom Bernard of Linton, and the Industry Award belongs to Deputy Ag Commissioner Tom Bodine. Merck Animal Health has received conditional approval from the Food and Drug Administration for a new tool to help cattle producers combat New World screwworm and cattle fever ticks. Director of Cattle Technical Services for Merck Animal Health, Dr. John Hutchison, says the product, Exult Cattle CA1, is the first of its kind.
What it's going to do is offer vets and producers a new class of ectoparasiticides, so it's an innovative product. And so it's a newest class of parasiticide known as isoxalenes. Our active ingredient is fluorolanner, and so it is the first and only isoxalene class compound to receive a conditional approval for use in cattle against the two parasites we've been talking about, New World screwworm and cattle fever ticks.
Hutchison says the conditional approval helps address urgent parasite threats.
conditional approval, what it does, it allows the FDA to address an issue like an unmet need for animal health, and it's something related to prevention or treatment, serious or life-threatening condition, exactly what New World screwworm larvae and cattle fever tick are. And so because of that, they allowed us to use some data from other countries where we already have the approval, and we demonstrated that it was going to be safe, and it also has a reasonable expectation of efficacy when you use it according to label.
Two of the four members of the new United Soybean Board Executive Committee are from the region. Matt Gast of Valley City, North Dakota, is the new vice chair, and Tom Frisch of Dumont, Minnesota, is the secretary. American Sheep Industry Association seeking a 201 trade case investigation to level the playing field for U.S.-produced lamb. The sheep group claiming imported lamb is now threatening the future for domestic producers. Federal Reserve cut interest rates for the third straight meeting, lowering the benchmark federal funds rate by a quarter point to a range of 3.5% to 3.75%. That's the lowest in 3 years. The move is to guard against a slowdown in hiring, though officials signaled they may pause further cuts as divisions inside the committee grow. The Fed voted 9-3, its largest split in 6 years. Financial markets rallied on the announcement originally, viewing the move as a sign the Fed may still be open to further action if the labor market does weaken. However, most Fed officials expect no more than one rate cut, and that's going to probably be it for next year. That's what they're saying now anyway. Again, so they cut it down to 3.5% to 3.75%. Again, the lowest in 3 years. For more information from the Red River Farm Network, you can visit Facebook and X. You can also find stories, podcasts, and more by going to rrfn.com. Reporting Agriculture's Business, you're listening to the Red River Farm Network. Welcome to Inside Agriculture here on the Red River Farm Network. Day two of the Prairie Grains Conference is today. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Tyler Donaldson has this report from the Alaris Center in Grand Forks.
Speaking with U.S. Wheat Associates President and CEO Mike Spear, the marketing year's about halfway over, Mike. Can you take us through some of the highs and lows here so far that we've seen for U.S. wheat?
Yeah. I think that this year we're starting off, marketing year started June 1, so we're halfway through the marketing year. We've seen it's been a very challenging year for our wheat producers in terms of where the wheat prices are now, lower than last year with the increased supplies around the world, primarily in the major exporting countries. So that's been a challenge. But I think on the bright side, we're seeing U.S. wheat sales for the first half of the marketing year up compared to last year. All U.S. wheat classes are up about 20% compared to last year. So we're starting the year off good in terms of our sales.
You mentioned increased production and competition overseas. What sort of impact does that have on what you guys at U.S. Wheat Associates do?
For U.S. Wheat Associates, that makes our job even more important overseas, getting in front of the mills and the buyers and the bakers and really pointing out and differentiating the quality of U.S. wheat compared to the competition. So we're going to continue to do that for the rest of the marketing year.
What are some potential markets out there? I know farmers are always looking for new markets and expanded market opportunities. What sort of opportunities are out there for U.S. wheat?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tyler. I think, and it gives me the opportunity to highlight U.S. Wheat Associates. We've been around for 45 years. We're a long-term market development organization, and I think the organization has done an incredible job of developing markets in several areas of the world. If you look at our exports, about 90% of our exports are going to 20 different destinations. So we've really been able to diversify. So we're seeing good growth opportunities in Latin America, good growth opportunities in Southeast Asia, and we're also seeing some good opportunities this year in Africa, particularly the sub-Saharan African region.
For the Red River Farm Network, I'm Tyler Donaldson.
Minneapolis wheat March, we're up 2.25, 577.5. We're looking at March Chicago up 4.25, 533.75. Kansas City March unchanged, 523.25. March corn is up 2.25 now at 446.5. January soybeans trading up 2.25 cents now at 1093.5. Reporting Agriculture's Business, this is the Red River Farm Network.